I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. The story of Rumana Manzoor gripped the world in 2011 when she was attacked and blinded by her husband in front of their daughter. She was a graduate student at the University of British Columbia and wanted to continue her higher education when she returned to Bangladesh, where her husband was. This horrific beating was justified in the media there with his alleging that Rumana had been unfaithful. A new book by Denise Chong, Out of Darkness, Rumana Manzoor's Journey Through Betrayal, Tyranny, and Abuse, sheds some light on a story we think we all know and this journey that Rumana has endured. Rumana, as Denise narrates in the book, is an unlikely victim of domestic abuse. She married a man of her own choosing, progressed in her career as a professor at Dhaka University, and was a Fulbright scholar. Yet we see the systemic challenges Rumana faces. It's an often brutal book, as we see the abuse that Rumana endures in her marriage as well. We see how difficult it is for her to leave a marriage, what with obligations, familiar or professional. Rumana's powerlessness is often harrowing to read about, but it's a necessary story as it's easy to overlook the signs of abuse and often difficult for those abused to say anything to anybody, even those closest to them. In the end, the book also looks at the incredible path Rumana and her daughter have gone through in leaving Bangladesh to come back to Vancouver for surgeries to try and repair her eyesight, to finishing her education at UBC with the help of aides, to Rumana's own daughter, soon to enter UBC in the fall. Denise Chong is the award-winning author whose books include The Concubine's Children, The Girl in the Picture, Egg on Mao, and Lives of the Family. The latter two books she's previously appeared on the program with. She's an officer of the Order of Canada. This new book is published by Random House Canada. We spoke 2 weeks ago with Denise joining me from Calgary. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Denise Chong. Ms. Chong, good morning.
Hello, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us. Part of the story of Rumana Manzoor, we all know that because we remember the news reports. She lives here in Vancouver. Of course, there's a connection with UBC, where she and she lives in Vancouver where she works today. But your book tells us a lot. And when you go about painting a fuller picture of her life, her childhood especially, her family, her marriage, her in-laws, it's such a rich story, and I can't help but think a necessary story for all of us to read.
I like your word necessary, because she bursts into the headlines as a, such an unlikely victim of domestic abuse. She's educated, she's independent. So the question emerges immediately for me as the writer is, how does an abuser and a victim emerge out of this social fabric? So I decided to unravel it, go back, see where life hinged for in a different way, and it carried just so many surprises. She was unlikely in so many ways. She came from a middle-class family who believed in education. She was considered, top of her class. Everything turned out perfectly for Rumana. And then she marries the son of her father's best friend. Mm-hmm. So everything pointed to an unlikely case of domestic abuse.
And then the assumption that I think a lot of us had and probably continue to have until we read your book was that this was an arranged marriage. And then I guess, as you point out in the book, that is the culture in the context in which she grew up, and that's what she even expected growing up. And so when she meets the man that she would eventually marry, that was not an arranged marriage. That was, they genuinely liked each other in the beginning, didn't they?
They were infatuated. The term for is an affair marriage or a love marriage. Mm-hmm. And again, that shocked both families, because in Bangladesh, the culture is very much one of connections. Your life reaches into family, work, school, business, and you treat those connections as family. So both families thought, although the two of them, the daughter and the son, would be in family events together, they never thought that they had to be chaperoned, yeah. That they were, unmarried boy and girl together. They considered them as family. So when Rumana asked her parents and the proposal came that she wanted to be married, they gave their okay. And then from then on considered, well, you know, we're not going to interfere in the marriage. And off she went to live with her in-laws.
And they were both going to school as young people. And yes. Going to university and the sort, right?
Yes, but betrayal is in the title for a reason. He's not what Manna thinks, and it comes as a huge shock to her.
There are a number of shocks as we read the book, and of course, as you illustrate in the book, the relationship with Suman begins with Ramana infatuated. But it goes badly, and it goes badly quickly. Even though there are some signs, as you point out in the book, you allude to certain family members being skeptical of all of this. In the run up to the wedding, because the wedding is a pivotal point, not just in their lives, but in the story. Mm-hmm. Could Ramana have seen signs of what would happen? Say because. The wedding itself is an important scene because the wedding night, especially, the relationship changes quite a bit, doesn't it?
Drastically. Could she have seen signs? Only in hindsight. Mm. She looks back and thinks, wow, this really was a textbook case of domestic abuse in that the marriage, the courtship is very quick, intense. There are elements of control in the courtship, but you know the courtship was away from her parents' eyes, and so they never picked up on it either. I talked to many friends of hers who said, "Oh," and they were all young at that point, and they're saying, "Oh, you know, he's saying things that really sound controlling. Ramana ought to stay away from him." But do they ever tell her that? No. So everybody just backs off. And then suddenly she's behind the walls of her marriage. The silence is kept. It's a decade of silence. And the in-laws themselves begin to turn a blind eye. It's as if they live in a parallel universe when they see assault happening. And Ramana is trapped by trauma, by stigma that she hasn't been a good wife. She starts to blame herself. Again, it's you're getting an intense look at what it is like for a victim entrapped in the marriage where there is abuse, because she starts to lose her self-esteem and she just starts to live in this altered reality. And at the same time, outside of the marriage, she's a totally different person. So nobody knows this.
Yeah.
She's a professor at a university. She has students. She comports herself very well. So nobody suspects. You know, even when she shows up in sunglasses at the university, and her office colleague makes a joke, you know, why are you wearing a Western fashion? She just jokes, I bumped into a cupboard.
Yeah.
So it's hidden in so many ways.
Yeah, there's, I guess one of the chief lessons to come away from all of this is from reading your book is that if you are in a situation like this, and it doesn't matter what sort of economic position you are or whatever job you have or the sort, you really do have to talk to somebody and tell somebody about something that's happening, whether you do something as drastic as a divorce or a separation or anything like that. Someone needs to know, don't they? And in real time, if you will.
When Ramana looks back, and when she read the book herself just a few weeks ago, she felt, she just berated herself. She said to herself, you know, I'm not a stupid person. I'm educated. You know, why didn't I reach out? Well, it's easy to say, you know, why didn't she? Why didn't she talk to somebody? But she just felt, as she put it, she felt to the point of being useless within her marriage. That, you know, how could she show such failure? That how could she embarrass her colleagues at the university? How would she face her students? What would divorce look like? Would she face the stigma? So on that, on the other side, you have the relatives who, you know, they begin to see signs, like, why isn't she showing up at family events? Friends say, oh, it's impossible to get Ramana to come out with us. And nobody reaches that divide to put a hand across it. So it's very difficult for women to extricate themselves from that relationship. And then sadly, it comes to the point where, you know, there's this near deadly assault.
Yeah, and again, the lesson not just applies to people who are in the midst of all of this, but those of us who are bystanders, perhaps, we all have a part to play, don't we, in society?
Yes, I think you make an important point when we say we all have a part. I almost feel like it's a collective act of domestic abuse. It's a personal circumstance, of course, but the personal circumstances vary from one domestic assault to the other. The narrative domestic abuse is almost follows a textbook case in each time, but that collective act is because Romana and her young daughter who witnessed the attack ought to have been safe in the first instance.
Mm.
So it really I feel like you have to go back and say, well, you know, why are we so complacent about women, millions of women the world over, living with domestic violence in their everyday lives? Why do we wait until there's a case hits the news, or, you know, there's another femicide? Why? And what then is the root cause of this violence? And why are we so complacent about it? So when you say we all have a part, I think it resonates for all of society. And I hope that, you know, when you step behind the wall of what was Romana's case, that you start to understand both how we feel in the public sphere of it and how we feel in the private sphere, and understand that divide and why we have to break that down.
So this was a long time that you spent writing this book, spending time with Romana. You also traveled to Bangladesh. What was that like in terms of the experience retracing her story and talking to a lot of these people who were there at the time? For you as a writer, it must have been an invaluable experience, but it's also a deeply personal one too, isn't it? Because this is a personal story for Romana.
Yes, invaluable for research, vital. I couldn't have done it without it because it's the lens of Romana, but to piece the narrative takes many angles. A personal story, yes, it's deeply affected. But the first warning I got before I even set foot in Bangladesh was that I had to be wary, because it's a society based on connections. The husband was only arrested after a public outcry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the ninth day, the High Court, in response to the public outcry, asked police, why haven't you gone after the husband? And the police said, and this is indicative of a corrupt justice system, said, well, we tried, but his cell phone was turned off.
Mm-hmm.
He's finally arrested. He's put in custody, he's never charged. So the public support on the husband's side, political influence, those in power, comes to bear. He's never charged, and then abruptly, 6 months in, he dies in custody. So even though it's years later that I go to Dhaka to do research, those who supported the husband, whether they were people in positions of influence or supporters of the family, are still very much interested in protecting his name and reclaiming his name. So I had to be very wary of who I spoke to. And it made it difficult for me, therefore, to get at the husband's side of the story and the family there. But, you know, I was also very conscious of a writer that the one and the principal person in this story, the husband, was dead.
Yeah.
And a writer has an obligation to people who, you know, aren't there to speak for themselves.
Yeah, I remember at the time in news reports that we got even out here, and I can only imagine what they were like there in Bangladesh, there was some talk about that he was even justified because she was having an affair. And a lot of people bought that, didn't they?
And still do.
Yeah.
Social media is rife, not just in Bangladesh, but in Canada. Romana will often get reports that it's still alive, that oh, Romana must, she must have been, you can't make a clapping, you can't make the sound of clapping with one hand. There must be more to the story. The talk was that, oh, she's not really blind, or, oh, she remarried. She faked her blindness as a way to get to Canada. So she had an affair. Yes, it hasn't abated, which is, you know, speak to the perniciousness of social media. Mm. But it just so happened it coincided with when social media took off in Bangladesh. Yeah. Because people didn't have telephones, so they didn't have internet, but suddenly there was mobile wireless, and this case just, which riveted Bangladesh for most of a year, you know, people were just stampeding to the internet with their own attacks against Romana, but as well, you know, supporters used it to try and advocate for domestic violence against it, the end of it.
Right. Denise, what's the process as you're writing this book, and even before that, in terms of the conversations you're having with Romana, because you do have to gain her trust, especially. How did you find those initial meetings and the discussions that you had about what happened and how this book would be written, say?
The first meetings were very important because she saw the book as a long letter to her daughter, you know, saying she didn't want her daughter to forget life in Bangladesh, because they'd both been uprooted to Canada, had not returned, and there wasn't prospect of returning. And she wanted her daughter to have this message that her mother was resilient. But to lay out the story as the writer, I had to have quite a frank discussion with Romana about the difference between a life and a book, that the narrative is really the writer's prerogative. So, for example, she said to me at the start, I want you to leave Anusha, her daughter, out. I don't want you to have her present at the attack, which, of course, she was.
Mm-hmm.
So there began a discussion with Romana, and it opened the door to, you know, saying, I need to bring in the perspective of others, of the family, of doctors, of your colleagues, of the husband's family, to why that, to lay out truth or the wider truth, you, the writer has to be loyal to that. So there was that discussion, but Romana was, I was very wary that, as Romana would put it, she would be re-traumatized.
Yeah.
And so it was a balancing act for sure to just slowly peel back the layers. Very slowly and carefully. And some scenes, because I understand how memory can be carry its burden.
Sure.
And can be flawed, too. So sometimes you only ask maybe once about the attack, because I don't want it to be, you know, once it's aired once to me, it's already seen the contamination of air.
Yeah.
So I'm very careful about how I elicit these memories and then order them. And then the other difficulty is when you're living in trauma, as she was, there's no order to her life.
Mm.
She can't order things. I mean, she can't even tell you, gee, was I kicked that time? Did he pull my hair? Did he slap me? You know, I can't remember. I've lost track. So, of course, writing requires a certain, you know, narrative drive and chronology and so again, that task falls to the writer.
And so it is, as I told you before we started, it is a tough book to read in a lot of parts. And but you mentioned a moment ago that she has read the book, I guess she's happy with it. But I mean, I guess she's not displeased with what you've written, I guess. Is that right?
Oh, she's learned. She tells me that she just learned so much from reading the book. It, you know, enriched her own story, understanding of her life and what she went through. But she definitely sees the book as ending, as a message of hope.
Yeah.
And that she, you know, survives it, but she comes out of it. She learns to live in darkness, and she moves to a new country, becomes the mother again to her 5-year-old daughter, takes up the reins of motherhood again. She returns to her identity as, you know, a student, as a lover of knowledge. So as a blind person, she learns to take advantage of a whole community who helps her go back to her studies, write her master's thesis, become a lawyer in another country. So some may say, you know, this is extraordinary that she came out of that resilience. But in fact, I hope what that story shows is that she would not let others identify her as a victim. She would not be entrapped by it. She would go on to reclaim and rebuild her life. She would return to the Romana she was before.
Yeah.
She decided what her own identity would be and what her own future would be, and she would just grab onto it. So I think that's, you know, an example for those who have suffered the cruelty of domestic abuse, that there is a way, there is a future where you can go back to the person you were and go into that future.
I live in Vancouver, but you're from here, and so we're both from Vancouver. It's a tremendous to read in the book just how the community here, especially at UBC, stepped up and made a lot of that possible for her.
In contrast, her university in Dhaka, when first word broke of it, the higher up said, "Oh, you know, it didn't happen on campus, it doesn't concern us." They eventually rallied, but at first word of it, UBC and Romana's international colleagues, students who were in residence with her, didn't hesitate. They said, you know, this is a global issue, this is a friend, the community has to rally. And yes, they helped keep it in the public eye. And UBC was the one who evacuated her to try. Sadly, it didn't happen, didn't turn out. But they said, let's try to see what we can do and see if doctors here can restore her sight. And that Romana hung on to that community of support to help. That was the thread that pulled her through what was the very darkest period of her life.
Yeah.
You know, to know that she abruptly left her sighted life behind, that she never see the face of her 5-year-old daughter again. That community rallied and supported her. She depended on them, not just to stay by her side, insist on visiting her, but to read aloud to her textbooks, to help draft her PowerPoints for her thesis defense, to guide her to and from her classes. She depends on a sighted guide.
Yeah, you mentioned her daughter, you know, and you referred to her as a 5-year-old, and I was, you know, doing the math. She's no longer 5. She's 18 now, is that right?
She's 18. She's just been accepted into UBC.
Yeah.
And she's going to go on to, I just spoke to her yesterday, she's going to go on to study kinesiology.
Really? Yeah. It, as one finishes a book, it's a marvelous book and such an important one to read. In getting to know Romana as you have, and she's incredible gifts and incredible resilience, you know, that's enough to admire her. But you know, you've gotten to know her quite well over these past few years. Is there a side to her that probably would surprise a lot of us?
It's her ability to be happy. She just will insist that she deserves happiness. It's part of her character, and she has a great sense of humor. She's able to, you know, bring a smile and a laugh about things. Like she said to me, we're constantly laughing. She'll say, you know, all right, people said I can't be a blind lawyer because, you know, I can't, I won't be able to sign documents, all right? You know, I'll give it a try. And if I can't be a blind lawyer. She says to me, well, I said to myself, maybe I can be a blind masseuse. So she's capable of making us, you know, bring humor to it. And humor, of course, lightens the burden of memory. And she's been a remarkable mother to her daughter, and her daughter's been, you know, been a remarkable support to her. And it's been great cheering to me to see the evolution of that relationship over the years that I've been writing that book.
Yeah.
And I dedicated the book to Anousheh. Mm-hmm. That was part of my hardest decision. And it isn't just to Anousheh herself. It was, you know, to the girls and that Anousheh represents. I hope they grow up to be, you know, that they can be safe.
Yeah.
Free from harm.
Indeed. And what is it like for Romana today? I know you were in Vancouver recently, both of you making appearances at places. Does she like signing the book herself?
Yes. You have to put the pen in her hand, and you have to show her the edge of the page where she should sign it.
Yeah.
And yes, she's greatly cheered that people want to read about her story, that she can share it, and she can go on to then, you know, it can be a platform for her to continue to advocate for an issue that she, you know, has marked her life and that she cares so deeply about now.
Yeah, it is a beautiful book, Denise. Congratulations on it.
Thank you, Joseph.
I hope it's not a long time before the next one. Are you working on something else now?
Oh, I think I'm recovering.
Yeah.
Because you have to wait for the well to fill up, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan, and this book is just a tremendous achievement. It's been so nice to talk again. Congratulations again on this book, and continued good luck with it.
Yes. Thank you, Joseph. I enjoyed this very much.
The book is called Out of Darkness, Romana Monzer's Journey Through Betrayal, Tyranny, and Abuse. It's published by Random House Canada. Its author, Denise Chung, joined me on the line from Calgary in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunder.